Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast for August 31st, 2020. I had to look at the date.
It's the last day of our vacation.
I know.
We're actually breaking our...
Technically, we shouldn't be here. But the hue and cry was so... Well, I don't know if it was...
Our listener was very irate.
A couple of our listener was testy that we didn't do it last week.
And right.
Didn't do it. We haven't been here since July. And frankly...
See, no one says anything on our... When you post the podcast on your Facebook page, and I post mine on my Facebook page, you get like 2 or 3 likes. So I, on the basis of that, tend to assume no one's listening. But then you go to the stats, and you see like a whole bunch of downloads, and...
I think people can't push like until they've listened to it, because that's really sketchy.
Ah.
So they see it, and then once you've listened to it or you've gone to it,
you're
not
going to
go back and push like again. That's my theory. But
if you do like it, though, you should say something on the Apple iTunes.
Oh yeah.
Podcast thing.
What are we lowering ourselves to that now? Go ahead and leave a rating for us. We don't even do that.
I was listening to the podcast we listened to yesterday.
Yeah, it makes us sound real.
What was the name of the podcast?
Just Thinking.
Just Thinking, which is really good. Actually, if you stop listening to us, go listen to the Just Thinking podcast on the Black Lives Matter thing, which is really excellent. But also, you'll notice that they do a lot of self-congratulation. Like,
well,
that was a brilliant point you made. That was just preach it. It was so amazing.
I love they play organ music when they're when they like the what the other guy is saying. They start playing That's organ awesome. Music.
Yeah, we should do that. We don't have any sound effects in our podcast. We should have some kind of...
We say that every time.
I know, but we're just technologically...
We're not real.
Incompetent.
This isn't real. This is just a mirage. You interrupted me. I was about to say that taking August off from podcasting was literally the most intelligent thing that we have ever done.
Yeah.
Like, if you wanted to add up a lot of things in the news that I would never want to comment about and join them all into 1 month worth of news, this would be that month.
Yeah, it was a terrible month.
I'm really happy that we completely avoided talking about everything that
happened. Wondering if it's going to be the worst month of 2020, which would be like, that would be saying something.
I don't think it's going to be the worst month of 2020. I think it's going to get worse. So maybe we should just take off for the rest of the year, because I don't want to know. The sad thing about our holiday is that I did kind of know what was going on in the world, because you didn't get offline for the month. You surfed the internet all the time.
Yeah. Well, except for when we were isolated camping, which actually was the most we went to a camping spot where there was no
electricity,
just you and me together.
Yeah,
which was the best. If we could have extended that camping trip longer, it would have been great.
Why did we only go away for 3 days?
Because those are the only days they had available at the campsite.
That's ridiculous.
it was ridiculous. There was like many empty campsites.
Yeah,
but Bowman Lake, New York State.
Everybody kept telling me we should go there year after year, and it only took 18 years to actually go.
And it was really nice.
So, in the spirit of not talking about the news, I thought that we could just each name some of the news that we were happy that we didn't talk about.
Okay.
And say why we were happy that we didn't have to talk about it. Did you want to?
Yeah, I mean,
a recap of the month, highlights.
I'm trying to think what happened first. And go back to the first of the month.
Know.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, okay, so we'll just talk about the most important things that took place.
By not talking about them, that's the key.
About them, right? So the Kenosha riots. I'm super happy that the Kenosha riots already.
I'm happy that I didn't have to say anything about the Kenosha riots.
I'm happy that I didn't have to say anything about the Kenosha riots, because if I had said something about the Kenosha riots, I probably would have been.
You would have gotten in big trouble.
Yeah. You know what? We're just seeing open murder and looting on the streets, and no, it's not caused by right-wing militias. It's caused by Antifa, and the more radical elements of BLM. They're just they're Marxists, and so they're trying to foment revolution, and this is how you do it. It's right out of the playbook. And then the shooting of this, let's see, what's the guy's name?
Well, I'm really sad, again, about the fact that everything has to be, as they say, binary. So this person who was shot in Kenosha.
Which one?
The first one.
Okay.
The man who was shot, seven times. Okay, I think that's a bad way to arrest someone. But he had just violated a woman who had a restraining order out on him, I think.
Yeah.
So, again, and I was just apparently curious, armed, like, and
reaching for a weapon.
What about her? I guess I was wrong, because I'm now a trans radical exclusionary feminist, that women's lives matter, but they don't matter. And women being assaulted is not a big deal anymore. So that's what I would have said if I had commented on this. Thank goodness I'm not even saying
anything. Well, and the second person shot, the Ritter, the 17-year-old kid, right, who wasn't from Wisconsin, but who did come to Wisconsin, and he came not to foment trouble. He came because he wanted to help
guard
property. And that's also a problem, because people who are pro-looting, there's actually a pro-looting position, are arguing that it's just property and it's unjust for people to defend their property against looters. So this guy comes and a friend gives him a weapon, an AR-15, and he is with a group of people defending property, because property had been destroyed and burnt the night before. He's a trained EMT trained person, and so he was helping protesters that day who were hurt. I'm not sure all the details of the altercation that came on there that evening, but the videos that I've seen indicate, I don't know, and more will come out, but it looks like he used his weapon in self-defense as he was being chased down by a bloodthirsty mob. So what's weird, though, is that people see the videos of that shooting and they compare it to the shooting of the man who just finished raping this woman, and they cry injustice. They say, how is it this white person was able to walk away without being arrested when the other person was shot? Well, the other person was in the process of being arrested for rape. That's one reason. That's one difference. Secondly, the police officers in Kenosha had already noticed this 17-year-old guy earlier defending property, and they were thankful that citizens were defending property, because that would lessen their job. So when he walked up to them holding his hands up, which is what he did after he emptied his weapon, they probably didn't think it, because he was already supporting the order side of the question, not the looting side of the question. They weren't identifying him as a suspect, unlike the other people who were, destroying and looting. And most of the people destroying and looting I saw in Kenosha were white people, were college students, radicalized Marxists.
That's the weird thing about this. Is the colors of people in the crowd, which I know we're not supposed to notice, and we're supposed to notice at the same time. It's weird to see large groups of white people shouting.
Yeah.
I don't know. I find that disturbing. It doesn't matter what they're shouting, I guess. It feels to me white supremacy.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm misusing that word on purpose.
We were in Ithaca yesterday, and we were having a nice day, enjoying our lunch. We go back, we go into downtown, we start, there's our trash. See, it's like old times. You can hear the...
It's like old times. Yeah. We're back. It's like we were never gone.
So we went to Ithaca Commons, which is this thoroughfare that's been, no cars are allowed to on it, and there's shops, and there's a great bookstore there that we'd like to go to. Now, here we are, just the family, and all of a sudden you have these banging drums and these screeching people marching down the commons, just destroying people's afternoon. I just thought it was, I'm sorry, I don't know that anybody's ever persuaded by seeing a bunch of hooligans march down.
I mean, I objected to your, I thought it was sort of exciting, and I thought that it's one of those, I mean, you were immediately angry, and I
wanted my boys to see that and my girls to see that and say, this is not how you behave in a civil society. If you are upset about something, you write an article, you
use your language, words.
Use where you get a job, and you use the money that you have to support maybe the political position that you support. There are civilized ways to protest.
Well, everything injustice. That you're saying is you can't say the word civilized. That's colonialist, and it's bougie of you to say any of those things. And how dare you?
I'm totally okay with the peaceful protest, and I guess this was a peaceful protest, but we saw it yesterday. But it's on the edge, you know. This is.
It feels a little unhinged. You know,
it's when you're not like you're not... this is. Yeah, this is not like. I don't know. It does feel like it's just ready to pitch into chaos.
Yeah.
And the language that was used—that's another thing. You know, that if these were people marching down the Central Avenue, singing hymns, talking about the need for civil rights, which I would totally support. It'd be one thing, but they were loud cursing, throwing the F word around, and yeah, you just that doesn't. That indicates hooliganism, not
well. That's
a reasoned that's, involvement in the political issues of the day.
That's a you're so bigoted in your use of the word hooligan.
They were mostly
I know
white college students.
I know, like well, because
screaming about gentrification.
So what's interesting to me, and I think I'm gonna be really off. I think I'm going to lose my listener and everyone, but I went to Cornell. That's one reason why we go up there. And I loved my 2 years at Cornell. I just, it was such a fun, glorious, like it was open. It was so interesting. There were so many interesting things to read. The libraries up there are just amazing. And I took fascinating classes. I took a class with the person who escaped from Russia, an older guy in literature, and we read, I mean, he fled from Soviet Russia. And just really, really interesting professors, classes,
yeah.
And all of it slightly to the left, right? This back in the 90s. So it was definitely not, I wasn't being instructed by anybody on the right, except there were a couple of Christians that I, took classes from, and so fun, right? And I love going. It's all so nostalgic to go up for the day and wander around. I did take one class in the 90s that all of my university friends thought was a little sketchy, and I think they were right. I took decadence, which turned out to be mainly about sex. It's how do you read every book and find homosexuality, sex of any kind in the book. And I read a lot of books that I don't recommend for people to read, and it's certainly a bad way to read great literature because it misses the point of almost every single book that you're going to read. But it was a sort of flashback to stand on the commons and see a visual representation of decadent, like yeah. Where we are as a culture is utterly and completely decadent.
Right.
Black Lives Matter is decadent. It's
not the slogan, the organization.
Right. Yeah. It's a very thing that happens when you have an incredible amount of privilege and money and time, and you're not out washing your clothes in a river. I guess I have just a very deep sense of dissonance because I grew up in a place as a minority. And I think that Black Lives Matter I would prefer to live in a place where I would love to be a minority in a majority black culture. That would feel more comfortable to me.
That's how you grew up.
I don't buy that a lot of white people would be really unhappy about that.
Yeah. And you had to adjust your whole family had to change the way the culture was designed for
the majority.
So, but that wasn't because they were racist. That was because it was the majority culture.
Right. And certainly there were effects of colonialism that mm-hmm. you could see. There was deep racism in Africa of whites towards blacks, of the French towards black Africans, of Arabs towards black. In Mali, there's deep, deep racism between different skin tones of people and where they are from. Mali, of course, is on fire right now. That was probably my hot take. There's a coup d'etat in Mali. But, you know, it's a very, very privileged thing. Everyone suffers in the world. To be able to march up and down a street in a college town, where you're getting a $100,000 education, mm-hmm. And you're going to go on into elite society, and you're going to have a nice house probably, and you're not going to physically suffer. You yeah. probably have deep emotional suffering, but that's not everybody else's fault. And you get to transform and change your physical body according to what the dictates of your emotional life at any particular moment. So you could get a sex change operation if you wanted to,
yeah.
or you can have sex with whoever you want to, and nobody's going to judge you for anything that you do ever. And what does all of that freedom and that wealth and that privilege produce in you? Deep anger. So that you walk down a
street. It's like the undisciplined child.
Well, so that is, for me, a icon, a picture of decadence. That's what I wanted to say.
It goes back to this, I think part of the problem people have engaging in the NRS is understanding the terms that are being used. So the classic understanding of what racism is or what white supremacy is have been just gutted. So when I heard racism growing up, I thought of people who had animosity toward people of other races in their hearts and who actively wanted to take away the equity from people who have different skin color. And that was, I was taught that was wicked, and it is wicked. That's a sin of partiality in the scriptures. And white supremacy, that's people who actually believe white people are superior to others, which is also wicked. But now that's not what that means at all. Like so now those words, which rightly evoke disgust in people when they hear them, they're used now in an ideological sense. So racism is no longer the impartiality or the partiality against black people or white people or whatever it might be. Now, it's not taking part in the ideological movement that BLM is pushing. It's not taking part in the protests. It's not taking part in the ideologically leftist movement. If you don't, that's silence, and silence is violence. You're a racist, and if you support a conservative political position, you are a white supremacist by this definition. It doesn't matter what you think about color of skin, you are a white supremacist by this definition. I was looking in all this way, they've taken these words that cause revulsion, and they've poured into them meaning that is that's designed to push a truly Marxist revolutionary mindset. Interestingly, while we were on, I think it was somewhere on vacation, the Smithsonian put up that chart defining whiteness.
With bougie values.
Yeah, if I'm going to link it, or maybe we can link it in the comments, but the Smithsonian put this chart out, with aspects and assumptions of whiteness and white culture in the United States. And so let me just read some of these.
I think we read them before a long time ago.
Did but... well, what they, okay, what they have, what, if you read the list about what whiteness is, this could have been written by Karl Marx describing what the bourgeois is. It's so whiteness has now been used, is now being used as a replacement for what the Marxists used to rail against as far as bourgeois values in bourgeois society. Now it's whiteness in white society. Individuals is a primary unit. Self-reliance, independence, and autonomy is highly valued and rewarded. Family structure, nuclear family, father, mother, 2.3 kids is the ideal social unit. Husband is a breadwinner and head of the household. Wife is homemaker and subordinate to the husband. Children should have own rooms and be independent. Now, what is that? What?
I mean, for me, that's culturally, like, that is an American ideal.
Fine. Yeah, there's certainly some cultural aspects of that, but the idea of the nuclear family? That the nuclear family is the building block of all civilization that you find. I mean, that
right. was established in Genesis. I mean, and some nuclear families include, you know, all of your relatives, depending on where you live in the world. Nuclear might look different, but the idea that there's an emotional connection between parents and children and grandparents and grandchildren and siblings,
yeah,
like, that there's a deep emotional connection that doesn't need to be broken or
right. And the fact that we don't have those kinds of larger families is certainly a tragedy, but the building block of those families is the husband,
parents, and the children.
Right. And the, you do away with that, you don't get a bigger family, you get atomization and societal collapse. And the idea of the husband being the head of the household, that's not bougie.
Well, it is. It's all over the world too, that mostly people expect that men are physically, you know, like, you don't have to explain this to anyone in any culture ever.
Yeah. But see, that's been shifted to that. So this is a bourgeois value.
Yeah. Now, or it's white.
White. It's a white value. Right. Right.
So it's fine though for then what's his name to go in and rape a woman who has a restraining order on, because for him not to do that is whiteness.
Yeah.
Because men, I guess, in this new world should be allowed to do whatever they want to whatever woman.
Yeah. I guess. I mean, I don't know.
According to the Smithsonian.
Well, it, not doing that is bougie. I mean, mm-hmm. Or whiteness.
Not raping women is your stupid bourgeois values.
To take the Thomas Sowell position and critique the culture surrounding the family within a black community, the impoverished black community, where you have sometimes men who father 26 children and women who have many children by different fathers and don't have a husband they're living with, and say that's maybe a cause of societal decline. No, that's you are engaging in a, you are trying to put a whiteness, a white paradigm on these cultures. And but like you say, you grew up in a predominantly black culture and families weren't like that. I mean, there was marriage, and often more than one woman.
Right. I mean,
but there was polygamy. An established structure.
Right. And
it wasn't sexual chaos.
No, it wasn't sexual chaos. I mean, everywhere there's disorder and trouble and strife, but right, chaos. There's political chaos right now, but yeah.
So the other white values are objective, rational, linear thinking. Remember this on Twitter while we were gone? Someone actually said, "Professor, 2 + 2 = 5," mm-hmm. and to think otherwise is
whiteness.
Right. So just go down the list. Is this crazy? Is this insane?
It's designed to make people crazy and not be able to think and not be able to cope. And right. I mean, that's, if you wanted to destroy something, that all of these things are what you would tell those people to do.
This is why you can look at a mob chasing down a boy in the street and him defending himself and say, well, that's murder. You don't have to think logically about what happened. You don't have to wait for evidence. It's the outcome.
Well,
this is what the guys were talking about yesterday on the podcast.
You should wait for evidence and out. Like,
you should, but you don't have to, though. Because evidence and objective rational linear thinking is whiteness.
Is whiteness, right.
Right. So like those guys were saying in the podcast yesterday, it was it's outcome.
Mm-hmm.
It's not process. So they were saying one of the interesting shifts that's taken place is that traditionally justice is a word that describes the process by which guilt or innocence is established. So rights or wrongs or what is due to somebody is established. And as long as the process is equitable, that is each person is treated impartially, then regardless of what the outcome is, it's a just outcome. So if that means that a black person is guilty, okay. If that means that a white person is guilty, is okay. It's okay, so long as the process by which the case has been adjudicated is one in which each person is treated not on the basis of his skin color or his skin color, but from the basis of the principle of justice, evidence, witnesses, all that kind of thing. But one of the but the woke movement, the and this was even on the BLM website. No, it's outcome. It's if you have a system in which more black people are found guilty of a certain crime than white people, then it's necessarily racism, even if the processes by which that was assessed were equitable. It's just racism. If you have more, you don't want to look at the cause or the processes by which these outcomes have come to pass, just the outcome itself proves racism and racial injustice.
Yeah. Well, so, yay.
We didn't have to talk about that.
I'm really glad we didn't have to talk about that. Well, when should we do another?
Yeah, you should talk about your...
My one thing that I was really, really happy I didn't have to talk about was Jerry Falwell at Liberty University.
Yeah.
I thought that was really great. Not to talk about that, because
it's really sordid,
as we know. Okay, so I have to make a public apology on air to my listener, and that's that I really didn't believe the whole Trump has got the evangelical vote. Okay, I did believe. I know, like, a lot of people claim to be evangelical and say they voted for Trump, but I just didn't. Like, I wanted to see more internal stuff on that statistic. Like, I did see somewhere that evangelicals who don't go to Trump, who don't go to church, voted for Trump at greater numbers than evangelicals who did, who do go to church. But I don't know where that statistic is. So anyway, I'm really dubious about the self-reporting, self-identification of evangelical. You know, what does that even mean? If you're like Rachel Hollis, thinks she's an evangelical. I don't know who she voted for, but obviously she's not a Christian. So anyway, yeah. My apology is that I didn't really believe that evangelicals voted for Trump. But apparently I am wrong, because the Trump administration had information about Jerry Falwell and blackmailed him into dropping his support for Ted Cruz and going with Mr. Trump. And then I guess that is the point when Cruz started to lose support and Trump started to go forward, in which case that would mean that, quote, evangelicals did go for Trump, and they went for Trump because Mr. Falwell told them to. And I didn't think that was possible or real, and I'm sorry that is nuts, and it doesn't make all evangelicals racist for voting for Trump, but it does make all evangelicals a little bit, like, what's the word, to do what Mr. Falwell tells you to do, to me seems very specious.
Well, even before all this stuff came out, the pub posing next to the Playboy cover,
yeah,
which was on his wall, not Trump's wall, but
it was on his wall.
The Robert Jeffries pastor down in Dallas, who has the Celebrate America service every year. No, there's definitely, there's definitely some, and we've talked about it before, civil religion, where the flag and the cross are coming together as one in certain segments of evangelical Christianity. And when that happens, it's no longer evangelical or Christian. And overwhelmingly, of course, those people are going to support Trump. But I think by and large, the people that I know who voted for Trump were not doing so because they embraced his personal moral values.
Yeah, I guess that's where the disconnect.
They were not doing so because they were on the Trump train and thinking that he was the new Cyrus and the God's anointed victory chariot. They were doing so because they didn't want Hillary Clinton to be president.
Right. Okay, and so I think that's what happened, is that people didn't, the evangelicals that I know, weren't excited about Trump as the primary was going on. I didn't know anyone who was a Trump supporter at all in the primaries. And so I think that was, you know, when I say evangelicals don't support Trump, I didn't know any evangelicals who were
right.
Trump supporters in the primary. When it was Trump against Hillary, well, then a lot of people were like, okay, I guess I'm going to do this horrible thing and may God have mercy on my soul. And I continue to know those people who held their nose right. and voted for him.
Right.
I'm speaking as an outsider. I don't understand that endorsement thing. When you get the endorsement of somebody like Mr. Falwell, that it means so much that you would actually go out and support that person
right.
based on what somebody does. That combined with major evangelical figures like Mr. Franklin Graham and others who embraced Trump in spite of his sexual history and past, and the hypocrisy of that continues to astonish me. So anyway,
well, I mean,
I'm sorry, I don't really know how this yeah. whole thing works.
I mean, again, I can totally understand the calculus of voting for Trump because you don't want abortion. I mean, that's the only thing that what might break and push a person over the edge to vote for Trump despite his moral failings would be the other guy is so much worse as far as his policies that I have no choice but to support him. I can totally get that calculus, and I think and I have no problem with someone doing that. And I do think, and I've said this before, I don't think a Christian can in good conscience or should in good conscience vote for any supporter of abortion, whether it be a Democrat or Republican. That's your
which just means there's literally no one to vote for often. But
that's the way the cookie crumbles.
That's the way the cookie anyway, I also, the thing that I thought was really strange and interesting, and again super decadent, was the person who was having the affair with Mr. Falwell's, with Mrs. Falwell, came forward as the more honorable, as a way of rescuing her honor, because he was going to basically throw her under the bus.
Falwell was going to throw his wife under the bus.
Blame everything on her.
He came out as if this was some surreptitious affair that he had knew nothing about.
Right, he didn't know anything about it.
And it turns out he was a participant in the actions.
So that's really...
Or at least that's the alleged thing right now. We can't be...
So I guess I find also that very, very decadent. That evangelicalism... I mean, I feel like I'm in college reading about the behavior of people who, you know, it's like a novel.
Yeah.
It's really shocking. And the degree to which, moral thinking is so confused, I guess, for literally everyone on the right and the left.
Yeah.
Is disorienting to me. I find myself feeling like I'd like to get off the internet and not know any of this stuff, because one of the things that I've tried to do this year in the era of COVID is to not hate people. And one way to not hate people is not to see what they post online, because as these things happen, the things that people say about them astonish me all the time. So getting offline for a month really helped me not hate people. Getting back on and begin and seeing what people are really saying on both ends of the spectrum is not a fun time.
Yeah, it's craziness on both sides. But you know, I do think I don't see anyone defending Falwell.
No.
Which is nice.
That's great. I'm really happy about that. Yeah, I haven't seen anyone come out and be like, "That's so great. I'm really happy he did that." Love is love.
I do see people saying we should have been, you know, the board of the school was really negligent in their overseeing capacity. And they should have been.
They should not have done that. Right. I guess.
And then it is important, even though he's not a pastor, it is important for the dean of a Christian school to not be doing the sort of things that he
was doing.
Right.
I'm also interested, though, in the fact that he's like, "What? What's your problem?"
Yeah,
I'm totally fine and awesome, and you guys are persecuting me. I'm not a pastor. So I can do whatever I want.
So I can
I can just do all these things, and you guys are jerks. So, and I'm going to have, in order for me to go away, you're going to have to give me millions and millions of dollars.
I mean, so what's shocking to me about this, this is a believer, this is as a Christian. I mean, I look back in my past before I was a Christian and after I was a Christian and before I was married, and I'm ashamed about so many of the things that still today. I'll wake up sometimes ashamed of the way I treated women and ashamed of the way that I acted sexually. And it just makes me cringe sometimes with the things I did and said. You know, I know I've been forgiven. I know God has taken that away, but there's still this like, oh, what I did was so horrible. I mean, but that was like 20 some odd years ago. And before I was even in any position like I am now, and here's, you know, I can't imagine, he doesn't seem to have any conscience, like he's not repenting in dust and ashes,
right?
He's not saying, "Oh my gosh, I've sinned." He's not David.
He's not David. He's not even Cyrus.
Right.
He's not. I mean, I think the interesting thing about the way that so many of this whole month has gone along, and this year, is that I think it is so deeply countercultural to look at yourself and say, "I'm a wicked person. I'm just wicked. I hate people. That's wicked. I'm angry unjustly, and that's wicked. I'm unkind to people, and that's wicked. I don't treat people as I ought to treat them. I don't love God, and that's so wicked." And then be invited to get onto a platform where the only reason to be on there is to show your own goodness. Like, the dissonance between those two things, you know. Christians are inviting themselves to get onto social media and proclaim their good thoughts, their good beliefs, their correct assumptions about things. And
you're talking about virtue signaling.
Yeah, but it's beyond virtue signaling. I'm supposed to be writing about virtue signaling. And again, like with the cancel culture thing, it's so big. Your feelings and impressions about things are good, and you should get onto a platform and show other people your own goodness, which is a decadent, unhinged, unchristian kind of thing to do.
Where you're letting your light shine before
you're letting your light shine before
your Father is in heaven.
Right. But it covers over. It's like the outside of the cup. It puts a blanket over this festering wickedness inside of the human heart. I don't think people should go online and confess their sins. I'm not saying that. I think that would be insane. But I don't, I guess I don't really know what I just,
are you connecting this to Falwell's lack of shame for, I mean, I do think that,
yeah,
I do think that there's a, I think you were hitting on it earlier in the year with your kind of frustration with the, I have the Imago Dei.
Yeah.
There's a kind of, on the, a need, it goes back to the fall, I guess, but the need to justify the self, to establish the self as good, is so strong. So, for women, Christian women now, this is what this movement is about. To, oh, you know what? You are so worth it. You are so wonderful. You are so
great.
You are
so
beautiful. You're just, special. You know, maybe you need to wash your face, but everything else, you need to wash your face. Your true beauty can come out.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if you're, you know, Black people are so wonderful. They're just perfect. They're just good. And white people are bad. I mean, I think that a lot of the stuff, and then if you can say that, if you can affirm a woman's worth and the fact that white people are bad and Black people are good, then you get social value. I think a lot of this is a lot of the dynamic we see in the internet is about the human person, white, Black, male, female, whatever it might be. And we all fall into this. I'm not just criticizing others. We all do this. Is the human person self-justifying?
Mm-hmm.
The human person not grappling with the depth of his or her own sin and trying to cover that up by receiving accolades publicly.
And what that, yeah, that's exactly it. And what that does, though, when you can't, this
is that
goes,
a brilliant point?
Yeah, it's brilliant. I just want to, that's brilliant. And I just want to, like, reiterate what you said.
We should have some
because
organ
that was really, we should have some organ music.
Like the theatrical organ music.
Right. I just love it. I'm not being snarky. I really, really love it. I think what the other thing all year long that has been bothering me is the gospel is not enough thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we don't need to preach the gospel right now because these issues are so big and so intractable, the issues of social justice and la la la, are so big. We need to deal with those things head on. And you've been preaching the gospel in church, blah, 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 and it's just not enough. It didn't work. Okay, that's malarkey.
Yeah, that's a lie.
That is such, because if you were really going to preach the gospel, you are going to have to start with the deep and terrible wickedness of the people sitting in the pews. Like, ordinary people, just run-of-the-mill, good, God-fearing, salt of the earth, or, you know, if you're in a congregation, like, good, college-educated, upstanding, academic, whatever. Pick a demographic. Doesn't matter who's sitting in your pew. That person is wicked. That person is evil to the core in ways that person does not know and understand.
He or she has the Imago Dei.
Yep.
But it's a shattered
image.
But it's
really, really...
Mosaic has been scattered.
It's just not useful. So if you really loved that person and you loved your community, you would preach the gospel, which would mean you would explain in detail to that person their wickedness, their depravity, their decadence, their sin. And then you would offer to them the good news of Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And you would do that so often, in so many multifaceted, kaleidoscopic ways, subtle, nuanced, but also direct and clear. 1,000 different ways you would have the gospel for that person, yeah, over and over and over again for every corner of their life. Then that person would be able to be transformed by the gospel, would become better.
Yeah.
would have some goodness of Christ.
I mean, the whole point.
And would not go into the highways and byways of life and be an absolute jerk.
Right.
Who sins all over the place and ruins everything. They would have been, they would still sin, but it wouldn't be as awful. And they would have humility.
Yeah.
And they would have a Christian community that would form around that. And yes, you would solve some of these horrible problems.
I'm reading this book by Mark Seifert, who's writing about Paul and justification, and he's undermining a lot of the new perspective material on the question. And this was he works through Romans in the first part of his book, and it's just amazing. He just draws out so carefully how Paul spends so much time undoing human pride in the first three chapters, especially. He's if you have this sense of worth that's based on your work, a sense of worth that's based on who you are,
right, your own identity,
then you're going down a path that's going to lead you to destruction. You everything needs to be. You know, Paul's point is that God has handed everybody, Jew and Gentile, over to themselves, over to their own sin, so that they have no other hope other than what God's own hand and purpose and Savior can accomplish. And until you come to that point, continue to go back to that point, that you have nothing to offer, that God didn't choose you because you're a special unicorn, that even though, yes, you're made in God's image, that image has been so shattered and destroyed by sin that you need him to put it back together again. And that's also where you find joy too. The Twitter is not joyful.
No.
The need for people to be seen as righteous, as good, as right. And I have this too. I'm not, I mean, of course I have this. We all have this. Doesn't produce joy. Even if everyone affirms that you are good and right and joy and true, it doesn't produce joy because you know it's a lie.
Yeah, it actually makes people more angry, I think. The more that we affirm each other's virtue and goodness online, the angrier we become, actually.
Because then you have more to hide.
Yeah. You
have more to conceal.
It's actually more work for you. Yeah. Whereas if you are a horrible person and everybody knows it, to one degree or another, you're not hiding from yourself or hiding from God or whatever. It's not so exhausting.
Right.
And you don't have to be so angry. I mean,
we see the, always in our podcast, come back to this point.
What?
The how angry or how
bad we are.
Well, not just that, but how it doesn't bring joy to self-justify.
Yeah, I know. I keep saying it, and I guess I have to keep saying because I don't know if I really believe it, but also I don't think anybody else believes me. I saw years ago, I was railing about when social justice first came into parlance, into the vocabulary of common discourse. I was really horrified. I really hate the term social justice.
Mm-hmm.
As a Christian, I don't want justice. I don't want justice. I, in a deep, profound way, if you gave me what I deserved, I would be so unhappy. I would be so miserable. Yeah. And I know that's true for every single human person. If you got what you really deserved, you would not be happy. You would not enjoy yourself. The gospel is the mercy of God. There should be social mercy.
Yeah.
There should be ecclesiastical mercy. There should be corporate, confessional, between human people, mercy, where you don't get what you deserve from another person or from God. And you don't give out what you think they deserve.
Right.
You just don't do that.
I mean, if justice is not, well, okay, there's a horizontal sense of justice in which we fair to one another, right? And that's not how, that's not what people mean by social justice anymore. But justice in that sense is a good thing. That we are, our law courts are impartial. Our, the way we treat one another is impartial. That kind of seeking of equity is good, but that's not what the social justice movement is doing.
No.
It's seeking, again, equal outcomes.
And in a real sense, I think right now we are getting the justice of God. If you wanted justice, right now, that's what we're having in this political cycle and in the last one, when you are forced to choose between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, and then you're forced again to choose between Donald Trump and Joe Biden. God is giving you what you deserve.
Right.
And without partiality, on the left, on the right, whoever you are, when you have to look at two people like that and you have to pick one, God is saying to you, this is what you deserve. And if you're on the left and you're angry about that and you're, and you hate Donald Trump, I'm sorry. This is God's justice.
Right.
You're not any better than this. You're not better, you know. You weren't special. Yeah. You're getting what you are owed. If you're on the right and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe Jerry Falwell. That's what, like, in our corporate misery, we're not better than that.
Yeah.
So anyway, here I am again, 4 years later, saying all the things I said last time.
Okay, so I think this, here's the interplay between kind of social justice, and I mean justice here in the right way, and justice before God. I mean, no one wants justice before God. Because I can go back in my past and I can see things where I've not done anything evil. I've not acted in a way that should bring about some kind of social sanction against me. And yet I know that what was going on in my heart and my mind. Mm-hmm. And so before man, I shouldn't, justice would be not giving me any penalty, but before God, I deserve death. And so that's where this word justice gets
slippery
because, and the demand for justice becomes so,
sketchy.
So yes, we want that equity. No, we don't want that equity before God's face.
Right. And also we don't have to demand, okay, it's really civil society needs a sense of impartiality before the law. And if you're going to have one set of rules for one group of people and another set for another group of people, then we are headed into a very, very terrible time.
Right.
And we should not desire that. We should not work for that. Mm-hmm. We should not have that. That's not good for the group that's on the ascendant, that's ascendant. Ultimately, that's not good for them. So you're not going to end up with anybody getting anything that they want. But you don't have to, as a Christian, you don't have to pursue that.
Right.
You can swallow the insult. You can swallow the slight. You can swallow the injustice if there is some. No matter who you are, if you have Jesus, you can swallow the pain, put it on the cross, and then give mercy back to the person who injured you.
Right.
That's just basic. And yet I feel like it's off the table.
Right.
For Christians right now, which means it's another judgment on the church. Like the fact that the church would say the gospel's not enough right now.
Yeah.
To say that at all means that God has already brought some kind of sickening judgment on his, or isn't, maybe he's, hopefully it's for good and not for destruction. Right. But anyway.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Well, thanks. Yeah, and all the points you made too, I feel like this is a very important thing that we're doing here. And the fact that we took a month off is devastating for
everybody.
So
I think we should. You think we should close with something light?
Oh yes. Let's close with something.
Our listeners seen us. I thought this was a joke at first.
It had to be a joke.
Because it looks like something the Babylon Bee put together, but it's the Joel Osteen Inspiration Cube. So it's just like, you know, like it's like one of those things you put on your counter, the that you speak to.
Alexa.
So it's like Alexa.
But you're not talking to Alexa.
You're talking. It's Joel Osteen's talking to you. So what this is like this cube you put on your, on your counter, and you just press a button to hear, quote, a daily inspiration, sermon, or affirmation. You can save your favorite content in one easy to find location. It has a high quality speaker that features brilliant sound and Bluetooth sync with other devices to use as a smart speaker. So you can have this piped all through your house. You can have Joel Osteen telling you that you're good enough, smart enough, and
doggone it, people like you. 52 sermons.
365 daily inspirations, 52 sermons, 31 affirmations. You can put headphones on, it's rechargeable. I'm just listening to, I will put this advertisement up, so in case you want to buy one for your family or friends, you can. And here's what is good about it. This is according to the advertisement. You can get in a position for increase.
I want that. I want to get in a position for increase. That sounds sketchy, though. What do you mean get in a position for increase?
Well, it's like outbreak or when a breakout. No, breakthrough. Breakthrough.
Breakthrough, not breakthrough, outbreak. Not outbreak. We've already had an outbreak.
Yeah, we want to break through. You can encourage yourself. You can say goodbye to the familiar. You know, I really don't want to say goodbye to the familiar.
No,
The older I get, the more I just want really familiar stuff all around me all the time.
And I feel like we've said goodbye to the familiar this year, so this is already outdated because everybody just wants the familiar to come back. Like, they negotiated this one wrongly.
Right. So your time is coming. That's another thing that you're going to hear. Your time is coming. No, that could be good or bad.
No, my time for
die?
My
time. I'm getting to be 50 now. I'm 48. I'm turning 49 this year. So my time coming is not something that necessarily
doesn't sound fun at all.
Sounds fun. Outlast the opposition.
I'd love to do that.
Yeah,
I'd love to. That's Christian. That's why Jesus died, is so that you could outlast the opposition.
Have a made up mind.
Yeah,
that would be good. So Joel's going to help you do all this. You have this cube on your counter with these affirmations and sermons and daily devotionals. Then this is going to be the harvest that you're going to reap. You're going to be in position for increase. You're going to encourage yourself. You're going to say goodbye to the familiar. Your time is coming. You're going to outlast the opposition and have a made up mind. And it's relaxing at home, at work.
Oh man!
Can you imagine someone at work
playing this thing? That's awesome.
While preparing meals.
We just suck all the joy out of your kitchen.
And at bedtime, you can have.
Yes,
that's what I want.
Instead of reading the Bible at night,
you can listen to Joel.
You can listen to Joel.
There are some testimonials. You want to hear some testimonials?
Yeah, I do.
It's all positive. It's not negative. Our lives have changed completely.
Oh, man. That's really funny because our lives have changed in many ways. And that's not to the good.
Yeah.
So, no one's happy right now.
It's almost like a friend was speaking to me. I'm at peace. My victory is already accounted for.
Almost. It's almost like. It's not exactly like because he's not your friend, but it's almost.
And you just dished out $35 to help him. Be even richer than he is. So you're his friend. He likes you a lot.
He loves you. Right. He is your friend.
It makes you really energized. God is in control of your life. And boy, have I seen blessings. He put hope in my heart. Could read the Bible for that.
It's harder, though, to read the Bible. Ask me how I know.
So all you need to do to get one of these things it's called the Joel Osteen Inspiration Cube.
$39.99.
Okay, so yeah, it's a subtotal, but then processing and handling is $5.99. And then total order, your payment is $45.98. So you should all be.
Man, that's kind of expensive. I think I would pay for it if it was like $10 maybe.
Yeah.
But
the person who sent us this, our listener, suggested that someone should get in there and figure out how to do one of these for John MacArthur. John MacArthur Inspiration Cube.
That sounds awesome.
So fun.
Paul Washer.
Paul Washer Inspiration Cube.
I'm talking about you. Why are you laughing?
Why are you laughing? You're horrible. Stop. Yeah. Stop sinning, you jerks. I would like to do one.
Yeah, we should have.
We should have a Preventing Grace inspiration cute. I don't know how to fund that. Doesn't he have to spend money to make money? But
your image of God is shattered.
Your Imago Dei is so lame. Well, we've done an epically long podcast here, which I think is important. I mean, I think you made a lot of good points. Yeah, and I did too.
It's a super important podcast. Probably the most important podcast the most important. To listen to today.
So, today. And only the only one because it's too long. Anyway, it's great to be back, I think. And we'll probably be back next week because there's going to be so much more stuff to talk about. Thank